Welcome to the Society of Cardiovascular Anesthesiologists Health Equity Awareness and Reflection Podcast, where we explore important topics related to health equity and perioperative cardiovascular medicine. I'm Dr. Trevor Sutton, and I'm excited to host conversations with national and international experts who will share insights and innovations that matter in healthcare.
Today, I'm honored to introduce our first guest, Dr. Felicia Machabi-Shekane, Professor Machabi-Shekane, who is professor and head of the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa. Professor Machabi-Shekane is a past president of the Cardiothoracic and Vascular Anesthesia Society of Southern Africa, and she is the 2022 recipient of the Female Academic Leadership Fellowship, a prestigious award that seeks to develop a pipeline of female academic leaders in tertiary institutions in South Africa. Professor Machabi-Shekane is the first African person in South Africa to have a PhD in anesthesiology, the first woman to obtain a PhD in cardiac anesthesiology at Witwatersrand University in Johannesburg. And she has actually received the first award for research excellence from this fellowship program. Professor Machabi-Shekane's mentors were Professor Bruce Picard, who guided her PhD work, and Professor Stanton Shernan at Harvard Medical School, who is a past president of the Society of Cardiovascular Anesthesiologists. Welcome, Professor Machabi-Shekane, and thank you for being our featured first guest at the Society of Cardiovascular Anesthesiologists Health Equity Rounds.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Trevor. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Well, Professor Machabi-Shekane, we're excited to talk with you about an important topic, which is health equity from a global health perspective. And I look forward to talking with you a little bit about what you're experiencing, what you're seeing, and what you're doing in South Africa. And give us some context, if you would, about how your work not only applies to South Africa and Southern Africa, but maybe the continent of Africa, to put that in context. And we'd like to connect that with what our listeners and viewers might appreciate from their experiences in different parts of the world. So in order to support our conversation, I want to be mindful of the fact that not everyone who's tuning into this podcast may have the perspective that you do about what is actually going on in continental Africa and South Africa in particular. So I'm going to try to support our conversation by sharing some information that will support what our viewers will understand in terms of what you'll be sharing with us. So what I first like to do is give you, this is a slide presentation where I'd like to walk through a conversation initially about the global workforce in anesthesia. This is an article that I think you're familiar with that was actually published only a few months ago, the Global Anesthesia Workforce Survey published in Anesthesia and Analgesia in July of 2024. And this is a color-coded map of the globe where the blue shades represent higher physician population densities relative to the population of the country. Yellow is intermediate, and orange and red seem to be lower physician population densities. In addition to this, there's some data from the same paper where they looked at physician population densities in different parts of the world. And this red line, which my pointer is illustrating here, is the recommended physician anesthesia provider density. And you can see that in many parts of the world, this density for physician anesthesia providers in dark blue compared to non-physician anesthesia providers is reached. But in Africa, we see something a little bit different, where most of the anesthesia providers are non-physicians, and it seems like there's only few nations, perhaps, that actually reach the targeted or recommended physician anesthesia density. We'll talk a little bit about that. I'd like your perspectives. I just want to point out that if you look globally and you look at the relationship physician anesthesia density and the trends in total provider anesthesia density here in light blue, that the trends are upwards in most parts of the world, but they seem to be flat or maybe perhaps even going backwards in lower income nations, particularly with regard to physicians. And when we consider Africa, Africa is not uniform. Different parts of Africa seem to have different achievements in terms of anesthesia provider density. And here I've highlighted Lesotho, which I believe is in South Africa, and Swaziland, which I believe is right next to South Africa. So Lesotho, it seems like it's doing relatively well. In other parts of continental Africa, there seems to be increases in anesthesia provider density, whereas that's not the same in some other parts. So I wondered if you could just give us some of your perspectives about the workforce challenges in terms of global health. What do you see, what do you experience, and what are your thoughts about challenges in terms of the workforce for anesthesiologists where you are in South Africa?
Thank you very much, Trevor. It's really an honor to, you know, be able to discuss this. May I just ask you to go back to the slide where you have the map so that I can give context to what we're talking about?
Yes.
So in Africa, as you can see on this map, we have a shortage of physician anesthesiologist. And your next slide actually goes into detail as to what is happening in Africa. If you look at some of the publications, you will see that in Africa, the expenditure on healthcare related to GDP in all of the African countries, basically, there isn't a single country that spends more than 15% of their GDP on healthcare. And that is broadly healthcare, you know, from primary healthcare to tertiary and quaternary healthcare. So that fundamentally is where the problem starts. Now, if you look at anesthesia care in Africa, as you can see on the map that you've just, that's on the slide now, on the data that's on the slide now, that particular part of the slide. You know, even though there are certain countries that seem to have enough numbers per 100,000 of their population, you can decipher that from this graph, I mean, from this bar chart, that a lot of the providers are non-physician, right? Apart from that, there is even places where, even with the non-physician a population of caregivers, anesthesia caregivers, that they're not enough for the population. So that's another layer of the problem. In Africa at the moment, particularly in South Africa, if I may put that in context, in South Africa, even though we're producing quite a number of physician anesthetists, and I believe that's also based on, you know, the quality of physician anesthetists that we are producing, we're seeing a lot of physicians immigrating. So that's part of the complexity of what we're doing. So you know, as a start, Africa doesn't spend enough on healthcare. Secondly, there are not enough physician providers, and we're having to supplement that with non-physician anesthesia providers. Now, when you look at these two, or the data that's out there generally, you will realize that as a cardiac anesthetist, there's not even data on cardiac anesthesia care providers. You do get data, you know, in the literature about surgeons, you get data about congenital heart surgeons, about adult cardiac surgeons, but there's actually no data on anesthesia caregivers for open hearts, even closed heart procedures. So that's another factor that we currently looking at as a group in our research, to try and find out that, you know, with already the shortages that we have in budgets and in physician and non-physician anesthetists that are giving care across the board, how many of those are actually giving care to cardiac patients? And that speaks to training. Whether it's formal training that people are getting, whether it's apprenticeship, so it's a on a global space. This is what we're looking at, and a part of that is also other subspecialties that are looking at, you know, training of their own subspecialties such as pediatrics and that. But particularly for us cardiac anesthetists, it's become important to look at this. Now, we've done a preliminary study looking at facilities in Africa and looking at personnel that give care to cardiac patients. And what we've found is that there are hotspots in Africa where there's good care, in spite of, issues with infrastructure and consumables and all of those. But there's the sad thing is that there are places and areas in Africa where there's actually absolutely absent cardiac care. There are no cardiac anesthetists, there are no cardiac teams to do that. And in certain places, you find that the care for cardiac anesthetists is given, through missions that come maybe once a year, sometimes once every 2 years. So this is where we're sitting at. And, through this study that we're looking, which is the African Cardiovascular and Thoracic Outcome Study, we're trying to see not only what is happening in Africa, but also where the solution should come from.
Yes. May I ask you a question about you are an academic university professor.
Yes.
And in the United States, when we have say, for example, discrepancies in resources, whether they be technological resources or human resources, sometimes we talk about centers of excellence. And we might try to compel in a region patients who have specialty care needs to receive to be transferred to and receive their care in these centers of excellence, recognizing that it's a long-term goal to have resources be distributed equivalently in all places, but that's not the reality in many areas, particularly when you're talking about rural areas. So to one of the things that might mitigate the fact that you the subspecialty care may be difficult to come by in South Africa might be an approach where you take advantage of this model of centers of excellence. Do you is there a structure or a mechanism to have you, for example, where you are, be a referral center for a region? And are, what are the numbers of what you might call university hospitals or centers of excellence? I know South Africa is a very large nation, but what's the density of tertiary care institutions that might be able to serve population needs if there were a mechanism to get patients to those areas, given the challenges that there are in developing the workforce that we've been talking about?
So that's a very good question, Trevor, and that's something that we're looking at. So yes, the system of centers of excellence, they may not be called that, does exist in South Africa. And in Africa as a whole, when you look at it, that's why I was talking about hotspots, and I didn't want to use centers of excellence or tertiary care, but those are the places where there is appropriate care for these types of patients. South Africa is a bit complex in that we have two systems of healthcare. We have the public facilities and we have private healthcare. But we do have eight universities in South Africa, and out of the eight universities, about seven of them do give care to cardiac anesthesiology at tertiary level. So those provide, for the other areas where rural areas, and it's a referral system, obviously, to come to the centers in where the cardiac care can be given. However, I think it's something that we need to look at on a continental, sort of like way, in that outside of South Africa and the tertiary healthcare systems, providing care for people in rural areas or in provinces where you don't have the facilities or where you don't have, the centers of excellence. You find that these centers of excellence in South Africa, particularly, also cater for patients from other countries, particularly in countries where they don't have these services. So patients get then referred into South Africa, not only from neighboring provinces in the country, but also from neighboring countries. So th this is not really, a sustainable thing if we're not looking at, trying to move the resources back into those countries. And this is what we should be talking about. How do we facilitate capacity building into those countries where there is no care altogether. And unfortunately, the answer is not only in training anesthetists, because for cardiac services, you need the whole cardiac team. You need a perfusionist, you need an anesthetist, you need a surgeon, you need somebody who look after the patients in intensive care. You need the nurses to be trained. You need we need to be looking at the solution as a team training effort, so that you can then plant the team back into that country and they can start services at some level. And then they can be supported to build on that service, to grow into more complex procedures that they can do.
I completely agree. And one of the things that that I like to approach and discuss this in more detail is actually the team approach, because the cardiac surgical team or workforce as a multi-specialty entity is absolutely important. And it's not only important in terms of capacity building, but I think maybe we can talk a little bit about quality and outcomes. And one of the things I think that we've certainly seen in from the health equity standpoint is that multidisciplinary collaboration is really an important driver of outcomes. Can we talk a little bit about data registries? How are you accumulating information about workforce and about quality and about outcomes, so that you can understand not only access to care, but how we're doing, and how that drives science and how that drives quality improvement, and they're all connected from the standpoint of equity. Can you talk to me a little bit about what the status of your data registries are, both from examining your workforce and also how your workforce and teams are doing in terms of care?
Thank you, Trevor. So it's at the moment we are in the starting phase, and with this study, the African Cardiovascular and Thoracic Surgical Outcome Study, these are the things that have been built into that process. So for us as a department, in our university, we do have a database for the anesthesia department, which for every case that's been done, it's logged into the database. So you can pick the cardiac cases and look at outcomes. So, interventions can be data-based, or data-driven, so to speak. However, what we envisage the study to bring onto the table is that once we have this study established, or the community, so to speak, because as a start, what we needed to do is to bring the community together throughout Africa, know who is operating where and what's their capacity and what's their challenges. And this is the preliminary data that we have. And once we've got that, we're going to go into the outcome study. And this should create a platform for a database that's continuously, being uploaded. Not only is the database good for us looking at outcomes and trying to mitigate for the problems that may be contributing to adverse outcome, we've also realized that, some of the guidelines and prediction tools that have been produced are produced on databases that don't speak to our populations.
Interesting.
And our population has different problems, including, that patients get to the referral centers late. They come to us with complex complications such as pulmonary hypertension and all of that. So we need to, into the future, and this is also another one of the studies that my colleagues and PhD students are looking at, is whether the prediction tools that are used with databases that come, for example, from the US or from Europe, do speak to outcomes that we see in our patients. And that for that you need, robust databases. So this is something that we need to put in place and be able to explain why our outcomes may be different. Are our population groups different? And this is, in the long term, you're looking at genomics and all of that. So the work has just started, but it's really looking interesting as to where we're going.
Yes, and these are exactly the things I was hoping to learn and talk to you about. I would like to go back to screen sharing for a second because you're transitioning into another aspect of what I wanted to talk to you about. And that is, I'm also going to enable closed caption here so that we can be inclusive to our audience and for those who might be hearing impaired. One of the things that I came across an interesting article, and this is from some colleagues in Ghana. And you can see here in this slide that the title of their article, which was just published only a year ago, is Advancing the Cardiovascular Workforce in Africa to Tackle the Epidemic of Cardiovascular Disease. The time is now. And what this article really was a call to action to address and what they call an epidemic of cardiovascular disease. But I want to read to you a quote from the article that I thought was interesting. It said, because it really touches upon what you just mentioned, was that some of the databases that you may, we, when we talk about quality, we might talk about the Society of Thoracic Surgery database in the United States and databases that exist in Europe and other places. But there may be some differences that are very, very important. And so the epidemiology of disease, and then you can get in further into the genomics and the presentation and so forth, may be very different in different countries. So one that this is what some of these authors said. They said, in contrast with high-income countries, the burden of cardiovascular disease in Africa is in younger populations, which hampers regional socioeconomic development. So they really talked about, in contrast, what we see cardiovascular disease, we're typically talking about. Of course, it's pediatric and congenital cardiac problems, but they're saying that you're not seeing septuagenarians, people in there, and octogenarians, people in their 70s and 80s who from ischemic heart disease and complications or valvular heart disease. You're seeing younger people. So I wanted to explore this further, and I came across another article that was also published within the last year, and this was in Journal of American College of Cardiology. And they examined and discussed the global burden of cardiovascular diseases. And in this global map, another color-coded map, where the dark blue and purple represents higher cardiovascular disease mortality relative to the size of the population. You can see that high mortality really is prevalent in Eastern Europe, Russia, parts of Asia, and a good portion of Africa. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention and get your perspective on, and I thought this was particularly interesting because you were talking about the presentation perhaps of cardiovascular disease in younger people and how that intertwines with some things that you were talking about in terms of socioeconomic development and how the economic development is related to how you invest in healthcare and you have public and private systems, and there's a lot of overlap. But when you talk about the types of cardiovascular diseases that you see, if you look here, if you can see my pointer, this is Eastern Europe. In Eastern Europe, most of the cardiovascular diseases, I would say, is pink and a little bit in green and much smaller purple and black. But if you look at some of the arrows here for different regions of Africa, Central Africa, Eastern and Sub-Saharan Africa, and here's Southern Sub-Saharan Africa, you can see that there's a lot more balanced representation of pink, green, purple, and black compared to Europe. So what do those colors represent? Well, pink is ischemic heart disease. Green is ischemic stroke. Purple is intracerebral hemorrhage. And black is hypertensive heart disease. And in particular, I think hypertensive heart disease, which is probably, I think, going to be more likely to be observed in younger populations. Is this a fair representation of what you see where you are? Is that complications of hypertension are changing the demographic profile of cardiovascular disease and how it presents to you?
Absolutely, absolutely, Trevor. It just makes the work that we do so much more interesting. Yes, we get a very balanced presentation. And remember that we still have rheumatic heart disease in Africa. We still have that. And that presents a lot more in younger patients. We have congenital heart disease that's not picked up early enough because prenatal scanning is not something that we have. in most parts of Africa. So it's not picked up early, it's not managed early, and as such, patients come when they're younger, like 6 years old, 10 years old, already with complications. So prenatal scanning, that's primary health care. And rheumatic heart disease is still prevalent. Hypertension is a problem, and complications of hypertension. We do so much in our center, so many aortic surgery procedures from dissections, which are related to hypertension and which occur in younger patients. And that is why I'm saying once we've got these databases and we can see where things are happening, what type of population are we treating, and eventually are able to look at the genomics of the patients to come in, to try and see how these then can be managed at the primary health care to mitigate complications of these disease processes. Then we will be getting somewhere. However, we're still really in the beginning phases. And I must say, Trevor, if you look at the data and some of the data that you've presented, it's very glaring that not a lot of data comes out of the perioperative period, right? You get a lot of epidemiology data, global health data, but the perioperative data is not reported enough in Africa. And this is very important that we start reporting this so that it can marry the epidemiology data that's being published.
Sure. I think I came across some of your work, and have you I think you've done some research in terms of data registries and looking at outcomes, I think particularly in the area of surgical management or perioperative management of ischemic heart disease. Can you tell us a little bit about some of your research in that area?
So we one of the groups in South Africa particularly who have gone on and looked at outcomes of our patients. We've looked at coronary artery disease outcomes. We've looked at mitral valve disease on its own. We're currently looking at aortic surgery. We've looked at pregnant patients with valve disease. We're looking at the moment at congenital hearts. We've just finished one of the studies on congenital hearts broadly, but we've also looked at specific types of congenital hearts. And we're also looking at whether these prediction models are working for our small population as a pilot to go into big data than when we go into the African study. But we're not getting enough of this reported in Africa if you look broadly. And we need to be doing that because this then translates to the epidemiology data that we're getting to try and profile the patients that we then get in the perioperative period. That tells you how complex the patients are because they've waited for so long for surgery, and then how that translates to their outcomes. And we found, Trevor, if I may just say, particularly with the studies that we've reported, that our mortality data is higher than what we see in first world countries because we get patients late, we get patients who are already complex.
Yes, that and you are, I think, are appropriately helping me understand that. And hopefully our listeners will agree that it may not be appropriate to compare apples to oranges. That even though your mortality statistics may be different from what we observe, that can reflect many things. It could reflect training, experience in terms of doing certain procedures, but it also may reflect that there are some differences potentially in the population in terms of not only how they present, but in other ways as well that we're yet to let you understand, because we just, as you say, just collecting the data. Is there an equivalent, a national data registry in medicine in general in South Africa, and then in anesthesia or cardiac anesthesia in particular, anywhere in South Africa or continental Africa that might be similar to, say, the STS registry, the Society of Thoracic Surgery?
Yes, no.
No, not right.
Unfortunately, no.
Not.
None of that. I think the surgeons may be contributing to the STS, certain surgeons in different places may be contributing to the STS, but there isn't an African database, not even just general anesthesia. There isn't. I suspect people who may be contributing, the surgeons who may be contributing into the STS, probably in South Africa and in Egypt, because those are the two countries that have a little bit more developed cardiac services, you know, that can be comparable to other countries. So I suspect Egypt as well may be contributing to the STS.
Okay. Well, can you give me a perspective as a past president of this of the Southern African Cardiothoracic and Vascular Society? How are these conversations being developed there in terms of at a society level, what might be done to approach these conversations related to really we're talking about epidemiology of disease and assessment of quality. How do we assess risk? How do we interpret outcomes in the context of the presentation of disease? How is that being something that's being discussed in your societies?
It is a conversation we've had. However, the conversation is not conclusive if we don't include African countries. As I said, we're not only managing patients from South Africa, we're managing patients from, you know, our neighboring countries. So for us to actually come up with solutions that are sustainable, and that would include also training, you know, we don't have formal ECHO training and things like that. And just, you know, even if it's apprenticeship on how to manage cardiac cases, we've realized that we should be looking at the continent and maybe not just the whole continent, because then it becomes overwhelming, but regions in the continent can then organize themselves. However, we're looking at even we're in the process of starting the African Cardiovascular and Thoracic Anesthesia Society, so that globally in Africa we are talking to each other, and then we can, you know, create these platforms that are regional, where regional people can then try and find solutions in the region. So that if you have a team that you want trained, the team can be trained in a neighboring country that has resources, instead of sending the whole team, you know, to Europe or to the States. That also allows the team to come back to your country and not, you know, after the training decide to immigrate or things like that. And also you're treating similar pathologies. So this is the conversation that we're having as a continental group that we've put together, that is also working on, you know, in future having this database and looking at the outcomes and trying to find solutions and trying to find areas of excellence where people can be trained as a team, you know, and supported continuously after they've been trained, so that their outcomes are also better.
Sure. I think this is tremendous. I recently had the honor of speaking with someone, an anesthesiologist, who an obstetrical anesthesiologist, who works in Iowa, and there's a large rural population. And one of the things that she was able to do to bring healthcare, a maternal augment access to maternal healthcare in rural settings, was develop a training module with simulation. So that there was ongoing development of they had ambassadors who were trained, and they taught people locally, and then they continued to support them through remotely through simulation. And that actually is something that we're, as we develop this conversation further, our next expert actually I'll lead is going to talk a little bit about that. So I'm glad that we are connected in terms of the sense of what needs to be done and approaches to doing it. And I think that that's going to bode well in terms of the future.
Thank you for joining us for part one of our conversation. Please join us next time for part two, where we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Mashabi Shekhane.